Welcome to the big show.
He could go all the way
to the North Valley's own Jerry O'Lennon.
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Is there a heaven? Oh, yeah. It's the place dreams come true.
On KKXX Life Radio, this is Live Local Talk.
I've always been fascinated by, we talked about it last week, Karen Carpenter, wonderful singer, beautiful young woman, who basically harmed herself by not eating, anorexia, which when I first saw it back in the 80s, I thought, well, she has something physically wrong with her. And then I remember I was like in my 20s, early 20s, I think. And it was like, and this was all new. People didn't talk about this kind of stuff back then. And apparently it was, maybe it was late 70s. I don't remember. And it was, we thought, well, gosh, she must have some sort of physical problem. She's ill. And they said, no, it's a psychological problem. And I remember thinking, that's not possible. She's just losing weight. What's the cycle? I mean, who doesn't want to eat? And it was very hard to understand 30, 40 years ago. Very hard to understand. And sometimes it still is hard to understand. We're talking about people who self-harm themselves. And the statistics show it's quite a few people, particularly young people. And we're talking to Gidi Hansen of The Growing Place. She's here for the next few weeks talking about the issue of self-harm. And let's, you know, first of all, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
I'm glad you're back again.
Thank you.
And I did give that a lot of thought over the last, since we last talked about, because I do remember those times. I don't
yes.
know if you remember it.
I do, yes.
And I do remember the discussion. It was, there's something physically wrong with her. She's sick. She's losing weight. And
so yes.
And when people said it was a psychological thing, we were like, I remember thinking, of course, I was just a young, well, I was in my in college, thinking, why does it make any sense?
Yeah, it didn't make sense to me either.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that is a kind of self-harm. It's a little bit different, the treatment and mm-hmm. looking at it. But the motivation is the same.
Right.
When life is out of control, I need to exercise control in some area, and I can decide what goes into my mouth and what doesn't.
And that's what we've been talking about last week, and we're going to talk about today and the next couple of weeks. It's about people who harm themselves intentionally.
Right. Intentionally. There was another factor that I wanted to bring up this week about self-harm. Inflicting self-injury releases endorphins in the body. Endorphins are those feel-good hormones that the body produces and releases in the brain and in the nervous system. And when endorphins are released, it activates the body's opiate receptors. So it's kind of like a hit of morphine or a hit of opium or heroin. But it's natural. So when the body is in pain, the brain or the nervous system will release some of these endorphins to kind of
protect itself.
Yeah, and also to compensate for it,
to make it
bearable. So some people who do self-harm do it for that endorphin release, because then they feel, oh, you know, I finally got some relief.
So the body's natural parts will
yes.
respond to the pain.
Yes.
And that response releases endorphins,
yes.
which allows sort of a quick hit, quick high.
A quick high, and it can provide immediate relief for anxiety, tension, stress, or any kind of turmoil.
And I don't want to jump too far off base, but is this kind of where people who get involved in sort of masochistic sexual they like to create some pain, which then
and
gives
then
them
it
some
reduces
pleasure.
The endorphins, yes.
And then they gain pleasure.
Exactly.
Okay, that's interesting.
It's pretty twisted, but it's a motivator
okay.
for some people.
Okay, all right. So today, I think we wanted to talk about,
I just wanted to add one more thing.
Right.
This can become a vicious cycle, because it is like heroin in the sense that when the effect wears off over time, mm-hmm. the individual now needs to cause more injury, deeper injury, greater injury to produce the same feel-good sensation that they got in the beginning with just a little bit of injury.
I see.
Is also what happens with addiction.
Uh-huh.
So it can become a real vicious cycle.
And we don't want to do too much recapping, but we talked last week that the population that does this, the general demographic is adolescents and
college-age kids, 14 to 38% of them.
And mostly women.
Yeah, twice as many females as males are reported.
Why do you think that is?
I think there's a lot of pressure in our society on women to be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, in the Marilyn Monroe era in the 50s, women had to be perfectly beautiful and perfectly sexual. In the 21st century in the West, in America, women have to be perfectly beautiful, perfectly sexual, perfectly intelligent, perfectly producing children, perfectly holding down an important job and bringing home a perfect paycheck. I mean, it's like the list goes on and on and on and on of what is expected of women.
It does seem like we talk about different ways in which women will enhance their beauty.
Yes.
And there seems to be more pressure on women to make the enhancements to make them more physically appealing to their figure and that kind of thing with surgical ways and means as there is men, and it just seemed, and maybe that's part of it. There's more pressure.
There's a lot more pressure.
Really, and in particular, I could see it particularly with a young woman who sees these images that we see on a regular basis and thinking that's the standard by which I have to live.
And it's an impossible standard. I love looking at the paintings from the 1800s with these, what we would call fat women.
Yes. Yes.
And that was the ideal. And I go, man, if I lived back then, I wouldn't have anything to worry about, you know? And women could be women and they could have children and just let their bodies be what God wanted it to be.
And you know, that's a great point because the standard was much different back then. Now the standard is a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model.
Yeah.
And that's the standard by which we have, that many women feel as though they have to
or reach. Even the runway model.
Yes.
Which is nothing. I mean, basically a stick. So, I mean, in the olden days, a woman like that wouldn't even be called a woman. It would be, you're a boy.
Right. Well, we're going to talk to Gidi Hansen more today about people who get involved in self-harm and ways in which we can attack that and ways we can be better and so that people don't do that. And we'll take a break, continue our discussion right after this.
This is Live Local Talk.
Gidi Hansen at The Growing Place. They have a number of marriage and family specialists, counselors, interns who are working to become licensed. Gidi Hansen would be one of those. And if you'd like to speak with her, The Growing Place is particularly involved in helping from a Christian-based perspective, but doesn't have to be. But so people who have faith and they have issues in terms of addictions, maybe relationship issues, maybe things involved even greater, like people who are involved in self-harm matters. You should give them a call, 588-0448, 588-0448, The Growing Place on East Avenue. Gidi Hansen joining us today, as she does every Wednesday. Let's continue our discussion on self-harm. Where do we want to go on this?
Well, some people think of self-harm as a kind of addiction, and others say it's a kind of compulsion. An addiction is something that happens physiologically as well as psychologically, where you feel craving and a need to do it, and if you stop doing it, you actually have withdrawal symptoms. A compulsion is something in response to obsessive thinking about something, and then you feel driven to do it. So some people literally feel driven to the cutting or the burning or whatever it is. But for other people, it's just a bad habit. They've fallen into it like the hair pulling, and they can't see their way out of it.
But bad habits, too, are something that's usually caused by some sort of emotional problem.
Exactly right. For other people, it just becomes their number one most effective coping mechanism.
Well, I want to make sure, because there's some people who are listening, and I would be one of them. Sometimes I have a habit of cracking my knuckles. Probably not a good habit, but I do it. I don't know if that's something I should be worried about, but I crack my knuckles once in a while.
I wouldn't worry. Unless it's interrupting your life, I wouldn't worry about it.
So it has to be something that's interrupting your life in sort of a serious way.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so oftentimes, just before a person engages in self-harm, they will zone out. they will dissociate, it's called clinically. They'll numb out or zone out, and then they'll engage in that in the whatever it is that they do. And then afterwards, after the endorphins wear off and the relief is you know, fleeting, then comes the shame, the guilt, the self-condemnation, the self-loathing, the need to hide what I'm doing.
Well, the loved ones around them are looking at that, and they're probably, many of them are probably saying to them, what is wrong with you? What, and probably, I would think, many of them are probably castigating them. Why are you doing that to yourself? What's wrong with you? And that just probably adds to the problem.
It can, if it's discovered. But the thing is, most of the times it isn't discovered.
Yeah.
And the person who's doing it can successfully hide it from everyone.
How so? You mentioned, I know, last week about being outside and when it's 95 degrees and people wearing long sleeve shirts.
You cover up with clothing or you choose to self-harm in bikini areas or in areas that nobody's ever going to see.
Mm-hmm.
You do it at a time in your room when you're alone that nobody knows what you're doing. And so it's real easy to hide it. Now, there is a small percentage of people, research says, that do it for attention, but most will deny it. Like if you point out, if I look for stuff on my clients, if I see a scratch across their forearm, I'll say, oh, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me, you know, they may say, oh, well, the cat scratched me, or I was picking roses and a thorn caught me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I notice there's bruises every week, there's scratches, there's new scratches, then I probe more deeply.
How prevalent is this, for instance, just at the growing place where clients have this type of an issue? I do believe that the saying that misery loves company. And when people hear that somebody else has these same problems, I do think they feel little, believe it or not, a little at ease because they're like, well, I'm not the only one. And are there a lot of people that come involved?
You know, that's
with this?
A great question, but I wouldn't know because of confidentiality.
Okay.
I don't know what the other counselors are dealing with.
Okay. Okay.
You know, but we do know from research that it is quite prevalent. And the other thing is Hollywood is glorifying it.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like putting it into people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
This is it's like a fad.
Mm-hmm.
This can become a cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
so,
I think it's worth mentioning. This is not a case of suicide. I think we mentioned that last week, but this is different. Okay.
This is different. Now, as we said last week, people suffering from self-harm, they need to find better coping mechanisms. And therapy can help, but so can family and friends. They can help somebody who's going through this.
How do they do that?
Well, first of all, the people who are the self-injurers, they have reported in the research that there are two effective ways of getting help other than therapy. One is people who care and who love the individual who's doing this, they need to speak up and offer support. But earlier in the show, you talked about a way of speaking up that would be detrimental.
Right.
Why are you doing this? You know, that's not going to help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But a way of opening the topic and drawing the person out would be, oh, I see some bruises and marks on your arm. Is this a good time to talk about that?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. We have one more segment for today's show with Judy Hansen at The Growing Place. Which helps people with addictions, with people involved with something as dramatic as self-harm, or even simple issues involving a marriage, relationship issues. You give her and other counselors there a call at 588-0448, 588-0448. We're wrapping up after the break.
Welcome to the North Valley's own Jerry O'Lennon.
Ask yourself, what kind of example are you setting for others?
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
On KKXX Life Radio, this is Live Local Talk.
All right, Judy Hansen is with The Growing Place. We've been talking the second week now about people who harm themselves intentionally, and why they do it, and ways to have it stop. I'm going to let Edie take the floor.
Well, thank you. So we talked before the break about how people who care about the self-injurer, they can speak up and offer support, but the support needs to be with empathy and with love and with care, not with accusation, because the individual who's doing the self-harming already feels ashamed.
Yeah.
They're already in pain. They already feel guilt, and they don't need it heaped on them. And also asking the self-harmer for impossible promises is just going to increase their anxiety.
What's an impossible promise?
Will you promise me never to do this again?
That seems reasonable, doesn't it?
Not with this type of problem. What a better thing to say is, the next time you feel that you need to do this, if I'm around, will you call or text me?
Okay.
If I'm in the next room, will you call me? Will you talk to me the next time you feel like you need to do this? Mm-hmm. Is a much more productive way of showing support and getting into it. Or if you didn't call me, will you let me know right after that you did it so we can talk about it?
Right.
And talk about what it was that triggered you or what you were thinking.
Uh-huh.
And that way we're showing people, you know, like the maze where you start at one end and you come out at the other. We're kind of taking the hand of the self-injurer and leading them through the maze, leading them through the process so they can get out. Rather than saying, there's the maze, figure it out and stop doing it, is okay. Not going to work.
All right.
The other reason that self-mutilators stop doing it, according to their own report, is that they grow disgusted with the practice.
Okay. That's a good thing.
It is. In the first show, you talked about why don't they just step back and look at what they're doing to themselves and stop. Well, for some, they do have that wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
They look in the mirror, or it's summertime now, and they want to go to the beach, and they look at their legs. I had one client who said, I don't want scars for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah,
this is not working for me. And others have the scars, and they have to live with it.
Yeah.
And kids recognize what those scars are. You know, they recognize the patterns. So people will grow disgusted with the habit and wean themselves. You know, I don't know of anybody that can suddenly stop, but they begin to wean themselves. It's no longer attractive. It's no longer releasing the tension. It's no longer a good go-to fix. It's disgusting.
You know, I hear you talking, and I have such sympathy for people. I mean, even though it seems, forgive me for saying this, it seems freakish and weird and almost demented. But I feel when you talk about this, I feel great compassion for people who have this type of issue.
And they need our compassion. Mm-hmm. They need our empathy, and they need our help, and they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
They're under a lot of pressure, and they're doing what they feel is the solution for them. It's not the problem, it's the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And what a therapist does, or a good friend or a parent, is help them realize, you know what, this solution of yours has created another problem. Yeah. Let's find a different solution.
Okay.
And then in the road to recovery, let's say you're talking with someone who self-harms. You want to focus on the person's feelings, not on their injuries. So you want to minimize the injury. We don't want to glorify how many, you know, cuts you gave yourself last night. Rather, we want to talk about, so what were you feeling? So what was it that triggered that? What was the last thought that you had before you started it?
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to make sure that if you are a self-mutilator, that you choose people to talk to who really care about you and about your well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's trusted, somebody who's going to keep your confidentiality, and someone who respects you.
I think that's very important. This is not something you want to share with just anybody.
No.
It has to be something that's kept quiet, because that's something that could really cause damage. And we've had this discussion before, and
yes.
I know you and I don't agree, but I think that, you know, I say, maybe it's a joke, but there's some truth to it. 90% of the people that you talk to about your problems don't care. The other 10% are glad you have them. And so I would say don't share things like this unless it's with somebody very, very trusting, a family member or a clergy or a counselor.
Yes. Yeah. And then it's important to identify what the self-harm triggers are and learn how to respond to those triggers with other behaviors that aren't self-destructive. And then finally, we want to learn ways to manage stress and overwhelming emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are not taught these basic life skills. I never was.
Right.
I was never taught them, and it was never modeled for me.
Right. Me neither. You know, it's a different world now.
Yeah. I mean, in my childhood, if people got overwhelmed, they either started screaming or drinking.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Those were the responses.
You know, it comes back to when we talked about our world. I'll mention it again. Karen Carpenter, 30 years ago, we thought it was just a physical issue, and we couldn't possibly understand how anybody. I remember thinking that's not even possible. Why would somebody not want to eat and do this to themselves? I didn't believe it. I thought it was junk science, junk psychology. I remember my parents thinking, "Ooh, what the? That's ridiculous. He's got a physical problem," and obviously. You know, things have changed over the last now 40 years, probably.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And if I may, I'd like to preview the next show.
Please.
I don't know how much time we have left in
this
show.
A couple minutes.
For the next show, we're going to talk about the finding solutions for self-harm that actually match the motivations of self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Give me an example real quick.
We got
a week before this. Let's just touch on this a little bit.
So in other words, if somebody is using self-harm to soothe or calm themselves, there's one kind of treatment. But if somebody is using self-harm to vent anger or release tension, there's another kind of treatment.
Okay.
Or if somebody's using self-harm because they feel numb or disconnected, there's a different treatment and so on. And I don't want to get into it this week because I know we're almost out of time.
Mm-hmm.
But there is not a one-size-fits-all solution to this. We need to find out what is actually happening here. What are the motivations that somebody is harming himself or herself?
And that'll be next week with Gidi Hansen from The Growing Place. Until then, thank you, Gidi.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to Gidi Hansen about self-harm. Continue this discussion next Wednesday. And if you want to ever give Dee Dee a call or any of the other counselors at The Growing Place, you should give them a call. They do good work there. They're over on East Avenue, and the phone number is 588-0448. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a good rest of your day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. So long.